I'm Bill Cadigan, the chairman and CEO of ADC Telecommunications and chair of the 1999-2000 season of the Minnesota meeting. It's a special pleasure to welcome all of you to today's meeting. Over 700 Minnesota meeting members and guests have joined us here this afternoon to hear from our speaker, Governor Jesse Ventura. In addition, over 1,000 people have signed up to participate in the web version of today's town hall meeting with Governor Jesse Ventura. As you've already learned, we have a very interesting format today. After the governor's remarks, we will take questions from the audience here at the Marriott, and we'll also take questions from our online participants. Jane Marasek and Gloria McClenahan of the Minnesota meeting will move among you to take your questions. Ken Darling over in our Web Event Center will present the online questions. Today's town hall meeting with Governor Ventura is made possible by the generous support of event sponsors. They are ADC Telecommunications, Ceridian Corporation, Dorsey & Whitney, Hormel Foods, Norwest Bank, Northern States Power, CIT Investment Associates, the Star Tribune, U.S. Bank, and U.S. West. Well, moving forward to introduce our guest speaker today, certainly our governor hardly needs any introduction, but let me provide a few details before I invite him to the podium. As all of you know, just over a year ago, Mr. Jesse Ventura shocked the world by becoming the first member of the Reform Party to win a major statewide office in the United States. He is also, as far as we know, only the second national political figure in American history to have several major film credits to his name before entering politics. As many of you know, Governor Ventura has also been a Navy SEAL, a professional wrestler for 11 years, the mayor of Brooklyn Park, the sixth largest city in our state, the host of his own radio show, a career he continues as governor. The governor is also a best-selling author, but his favorite job, I'm told, is his work as a volunteer football coach at Champlain Park High School. At this point, it's my pleasure to introduce to you the governor of the state of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura.
Thank you. Before I go to my prepared speech, I guess I should give a reason why being the volunteer football coach is my favorite job, because the kids do what I tell them. Isn't always that way in the other ones. But no, it's very rewarding, and I'm going to continue to do so. Coach the football because it's a good way for to get out there and mingle with the young people and be involved in them, and it's also good therapy for me. I enjoy it very much on the end of the work day, and there's nothing better on Friday night than to go to high school football. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to address members of the Minnesota meeting here in Minneapolis. In addition to a state and nationwide audience, in addition, we'll have a state and nationwide audience has joined us through the internet, modern technology. It's indeed an honor to be here today. You know, sometimes you just have to take a step back, look around, and shake your head, for the times, they really are changing, especially here in the new millennium that we're entering into. The days of getting our information over the back fence or at the barber shop aren't necessarily gone, and they shouldn't be gone if that's the way we choose to live. But there are so many more choices today, it's really very mind-boggling in some ways. Did you know that the United States spends more on information systems in a year than in any part of the industrial infrastructure right now? And in about 5 years, over 150 million Americans will be choosing the internet to do both business and get information, 150 million people. While it may not replace whistle stop campaigns and fireside chats, it will give us so many more opportunities and definitely change politics and government as we know it. Of course, technology isn't the only thing that's changing in the ways that we do politics. I think a certain ex-wrestler getting elected governor in Minnesota might have a little bit to do with the changing way of politics in the future. But seriously, government at all levels needs to take a hard look at how it can use this new technology to better serve its citizens. Thanks to innovations in technology, there are better ways to do the public's business, cheaper, faster, and more focused on results rather than the process. In October, I traveled around the state to talk about the big plan for Minnesota. One of the key components of my big plan is seizing the opportunity to use technology, to limit the size of state government, to increase accountability of state government, and to simplify systems like lawmaking, rulemaking, and taxes so that people can better understand and better participate in their government. We call this our service, not systems, vision. There are a lot of systems out there that have been around for a very, very, very long time. Systems that were designed for a world without technology. I've challenged all my commissioners to think about serving our citizens in this new age and not to be locked in to the same old systems. And while we are already starting to improve some services in the executive branch of government, we need to look across all three branches of government for ways to improve services, reforming old systems. The most obvious and important of these reforms is a smaller, single-house legislature. Today, I want to talk specifically about this reform. Many people ask me, why are you so excited about unicameral legislature? While there are many good reasons to consider the change to a single-house legislature, first and foremost, I think, the legislative process is needlessly confusing and extremely difficult to follow, and I fundamentally believe in a simpler, limited government that is accountable to the people. Second, all too often the most important decisions are made at the 11th hour during marathon conference committee hearings and floor sessions. Third, citizens are often left out or have a minimal impact on the legislative process. And finally, and maybe most importantly, since the Supreme Court decision of one person, one vote in 1962, there is no constitutional justification for two legislative bodies. Of course, there's lots of interesting facts that would lead any reasonable person to question the need for our current system. A few examples. Did you know that California has about 30 million more people than Minnesota does? But California has 81 fewer legislators. I know that some people question a reduction in legislators. But keep in mind that a reduction in the number of legislators will have absolutely no effect on the representation in a representative style of democracy. All areas of Minnesota, city, suburban, and rural, will have the same ratio of representation. But enough of that. We could spend months debating the merits of a one system versus a two-party system, which hopefully we will. While I will be the first at the table for that debate, the only unicameral issue that the legislature must decide in the next session is whether this is a reasonable initiative to put on the ballot. I believe that is a no-brainer. If they come to St. Paul and vote on it quickly, like the first week of session, then we can begin the debate of which system is better. I said at the beginning of this speech that technology and changing voter attitudes towards government gives us the opportunity to adapt our systems to a new era. A single house legislature is one of those opportunities. And when it comes to size and the system that our state will use to govern the people, it only makes sense that the people should decide. I'm a strong believer in our representative democracy. We trust our elected leaders to make important policy and budgetary decisions for us. But this is a constitutional change that alters the very structure of our government. This constitutional change, in which there is an inherent conflict of interest for legislators, this is your decision, the people, not theirs. Last week, I addressed the members of a House committee that will vote on a bill that will let you decide this fundamental issue. More than 600 citizens turned out to hear the debate. At the end of my testimony, I took an informal poll of the audience. I asked who supported single house legislature. Maybe two-thirds of the hands went up. Then I asked who supports our current two-house legislature. Raise your hands. The other third or better went up in the air. Finally, I asked what I believe to be the most important question. I asked them to raise their hands if they thought that the people should not, I repeat, should not decide this issue. Not one hand out of over 600 people in Fergus Falls, Minnesota raised their hand to say the people should not decide this issue. Not one. It's clear to me that this is an issue that people, regardless of their position, want to decide. It's about empowering people and re-engaging you in your government. From the beginning of my run for governor, I have been fighting a revolution against apathy. 4 months during my campaign, I educated adults who had never voted about when the election was, how they could register, and why they needed to care about participating. In record numbers in Minnesota, they showed up. And of course, we all know what happened from there. Here I am. Minnesotans came out to vote in record numbers. Why? Because they believed that their vote would make a difference. And it sure did, didn't it? You know, if you start to think back that your vote doesn't make a difference, well, think back about 18 months ago. Who would have thought that 18 months later, Jesse Ventura would be leading a Minnesota trade delegation to Japan? It's interesting. When I was in Japan, I was meeting with a group of Japanese tourism executives and inviting them to have tour groups stop and see me when they're in Minnesota. Of course, I had to be honest with them. I said that when people travel to Minnesota these days, I'm not sure if they're really traveling to Minnesota to see me. I think it's more likely that they're traveling to Minnesota to see who in the heck these people were who voted me into office. But seriously, I believe that because of this last election, more and more people are truly believing that they can make a difference. Today, there are more voices than ever before debating tax policy, spending issues, and yes, even as something as weird sounding as unicameral. Now, when I go to grade schools, I teach the kids a new word. In fact, not when I go to grade schools, I get a tremendous volume of children that come to the Capitol on a daily basis. And every group of children, I teach them a new word, unicameral. And it's great to watch these kindergartners. They stand there with these big name plates on the front of them, you know, so you know who they are. And they go home that night and tell mom and dad the new word they learned, unicameral. You're chuckling, but They always ask me something. They ask me, what did wrestling teach you to be governor? Well, I'll tell you what wrestling taught me. Convince the children and the adults will follow. Speaking at schools, it was very gratifying that this year we had more candidates for school board election than in any time in recent history. People in St. Paul turned out in record numbers to vote on the stadium referendum. And citizens are flocking to serve on state boards and commissions now. People are tuning in, and we are much the better for it. We have a great opportunity to engage Minnesotans in this important dialogue. What a better time than now, at the turn of the century and the beginning of a new millennium, to revisit how we govern. No matter which system is deemed to be the best structure for serving the people, the wisdom of the voters will be revealed after spirited debate next summer and fall. In either case, we all win by focusing citizens back on their government in a creative, meaningful way. While it's up to the legislature to determine whether the people have the opportunity to participate in this important dialogue, it's far more up to you to put this issue on the ballot. Talk to your legislators. Tell them, let the people decide. Active, engaged citizens are critical to government reform. While many politicians have written off half of all the eligible voters, 50%, I will not give up. Increasing voter turnout is just the start. Citizens must participate in all aspects of government for democracy to survive. Vote. Volunteer in your community. Serve others. Challenge conventional wisdom. Speak your mind and offer ideas. Pay attention to what's going on around you. And seize every chance you have to ask your legislature to give you a chance to adapt our government to this new era of politics and this new millennium ahead of us. While I'm governor, I will do my best to give you every opportunity to participate, but it is up to you, to take the full advantage of these opportunities to help rebuild our democracy. Working together, we will not fail. Thank you very much. Should I have gone longer to avoid the questions?
No, absolutely not. This is going to be the best part, Governor. Thank you, Governor Ventura. We're going to go first to a question from the World Wide Web. Ken, do a first question for us.
Thank you very much, Governor Ventura. As you know, we have several hundred people who have logged on to this event via the World Wide Web, and they're hearing you and they're answering polling questions. As a matter of fact, we just asked them how many of them supported putting your unicameral proposal to the voters of Minnesota, and we had a full 75% who said yes and only 13% who said no, and the rest were in the unsure category. But, and we also are getting some actual questions. We have several hundred that have come in, and we're trying to get them to you as best as we can. The first question is from Trevor Chick, who's a junior at Lakeville High School. He wants to know, how do you feel about having every word that you say, and this is in his exact words, how do you feel about having every word that you say, everything that you do, watched and analyzed? Do you think the media has a positive or negative effect on the views of the public?
Well, thank you, Trevor. That's a good question. Notice how I have a relationship with those kids. It comes with the territory. You know, it's kind of interesting. Many of the controversial things I've been involved in were not new. I said everything, take the Playboy interview. There's nothing in there that I hadn't said on talk radio. But yet, now as I say it as a governor, it's put under that type of scrutiny. I'm not going to change who I am, because for every one bit of criticism that I get dozens and dozens of people that come up to me on a daily basis and say, remain who you are. You are who we elected. Do not change. And I've just made a concerted effort more so, though, to focus on policy. That's why I'm here as governor, to be policy. And I would ask people, don't judge me necessarily by what I say in an interview. Judge me by what I do behind the desk at the state capitol of St. Paul, Minnesota. And so it is tough, though, being put under that type of scrutiny, to get back to Trevor's question, because I do an average of probably 3 to 5 interviews a day, which translates to anywhere from 15 to 25 a week, which if you multiply that out to 52 weeks out of the year, you get a pretty good idea of how many interviews I do on a daily basis. Well, I'm not perfect. And at some point along the time, I'm going to say something in an interview that will be splattered on headlines. But that's the goes with the territory. You have to be aware of it. But it's not going to deter from what I'm attempting to accomplish as governor. I won't let it get in the way.
Thank you, Governor Ventura. We have another question here from John Keitlinger from Windsor Financial. John.
Thank you, Governor. You mentioned in the beginning of your remarks the marvel of the Internet. I wondered what your opinion was about taxing transactions from the state of Minnesota, taxing transactions on the Internet.
Well, it's an interesting thing that we're going to have to deal with, because so many transactions are now being done over the Internet, and currently there isn't any taxing policy in place there. And that definitely hurts, especially local government, which is so reliant upon that type of taxation. And so when local government starts to suffer, they're naturally going to turn to the state in an attempt to rectify the situation. So I don't have a clear answer on it right now. I haven't made a determination, but it's something that myself and the legislature is going to have to look very hard at, and we're going to have to do it in a pretty timely manner right now, because the Internet is becoming such a transaction-oriented business out there. And how do you do it? I mean, are you going to make it very complicated if you do apply a tax to it? Will it have to be in regard to every local jurisdiction? Because many times the taxes in one area are different, certainly, than another area. Or do you go simply to a flat across-the-board tax of whatever percent that it would be at that point in time? But I think it's something that government will have to look very hard at, because, you know, if people are purchasing that way and avoiding the other way, that in turn means government revenues will go down at that point in time. And I will say this to you, that I'm an advocate of the national sales tax, so I believe in sales taxes, because I believe they're very much consumer driven. As long as we're not taxing food and clothing, generally the necessities of life, I like those kind of taxes, because then you choose when you're taxed by what you buy.
Thank you very much, Governor Ventura. We have another question from one of our online participants who's here for the National Town Hall meeting with Governor Jesse Ventura. Her name is Lisa Takamiya. She's sending us in a question from Tacoma, Washington, the sister city of Seattle, where, as many of you know, the World Trade Organization is meeting right now. She says, in her words, as you know, Seattle is in a state of chaos. I think the governor of our state is overreacting. What would you do in your state if a similar situation was happening in Minnesota?
Well, first of all, I'm not fully aware of the full situation happening there, so for me to make judgment on the governor of Washington, I think, would be inappropriate. He is there, he is being informed on the situation and will act accordingly. As far as what I would do, well, certainly people have the right to protest. They certainly do enjoy that right in our country, and we don't want to take that from them. But we must maintain that it's a civil protest, that public safety is not ever endangered as the result of a protest. So I think I would look at it as on the public safety issue side of making sure that the general public, that the protests were safe on both sides, and act accordingly that way. But for me to second guess the governor of Washington would be wrong, because I'm not in a position to do so.
Thank you, Governor. Our next question is from Ward Nixon, who's with LaSalle Bank.
Governor Ventura, putting aside your issue related to a unicameral legislature, what is your primary objective for the upcoming year, and how would you measure your success?
Well, the primary objective this year will be to do a prudent bonding session. I mean, this is the bonding session. This is the session that we bond for projects. And I think that my measure of success on this will be somewhat to contain them. Because bonding is, to put it in very simplified terms that I think we all can understand, it's like getting that little piece of plastic, that credit card. And it is so very easy to go out, especially during these festive times that we have in the next month. It's so simple to go out with that credit card and get everything you want, isn't it? I mean, all you got to do is hand them that credit card and they run it through a machine and you walk out with your merchandise. And then about a month and a half later, the bad news arrives. You do have to pay for it, and you have to pay for it with interest. So I think it's a case that my view will be to hold a prudent bonding session. One of my standard rules is we're to do what's necessary, not necessarily what's nice. And that's how I run my government. We will do what's necessary, but not necessarily what's nice. I will say this, that one of the places I'm going to be very, very critical is local projects. It better have a purpose for the state of Minnesota, otherwise the locals can bond for it themselves.
Thank you very much, Governor Ventura. We're back online. This time we have a Minnesota question from Jay Craden, who lives in Richfield and is listening to you live on the internet. He wants to know, this is a unicameral question, what is your game plan to get the unicameral legislature put onto the ballot? When do you think it will be done?
Well, the game plan is simply what we're doing here today is part of it, is getting it out there to the people and having the people react to it and tell their legislators that, yes, this is our decision to make. This is not your decision. You have a conflict of interest. Government is by and for the people. We are the people. Therefore, it has tripartisan support to get it on the ballot. Democrats, Republicans, Reform, Independents, everyone. And it's a question that I think will invigorate voter participation and people participation. It'll make for a very lively election this November and hopefully a very large voter turnout, which is good. So what my job is now is to take my case to the public and say, you, the people of Minnesota, deserve the right to make the decision that it should be put on the ballot, and then let both sides go out and argue their case. I would say to people that support bicameral and who oppose putting it on the ballot, I would say to them, if your system is the best, won't it prevail? Why would you be afraid to put your system up to scrutiny? Why would you be afraid to not put it out there, make your case, and let the intelligent people of Minnesota make that decision? And if they won't do that, then that makes my case for unicameral.
Thank you, Governor. We have a question from a group of students over here that you can be proud of. We have Stephanie Link from Champlain Park High School.
Governor Ventura, which do you think, vouchers or national graduation standards, have a greater chance at improving student performance?
Could you repeat that again?
Which do you think, vouchers or national graduation standards, have a better chance at improving student performance?
I think graduation standards do. I always like to go back and relate it to football a little bit on this question. The great coach of the Green Bay Packers, Vince Lombardi, once made a statement. He said, if you're not keeping score, you're just practicing. And that's true. And that's why we need a standard to keep score. We need a method to where we can judge whether standards are being met and the teachers are performing in the manner that we need them to perform. And that can be done and still not dictate to the local school districts how they go about it. They can go about it and reach those standards. All I care is that they reach them. I will give them the versatility to reach them in their own manner. And as far as vouchers go, I haven't seen a voucher system yet that I could participate in. It's always based upon how much money you make. And if you're going to have a standard system, let's make it standard for all, not just for a few.
Thank you very much, Governor Ventura. We're ready now for another online question. This one is from a gentleman named Keith Stelborez, who is lives in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He's a TV producer there. He wants to know, this is a good question, how would you feel if the First Lady, Hillary Clinton, moved to Minnesota and ran for the U.S. Senate?
Well, first of all, and I don't know this, I probably could look around and ask for help. I believe you have to be here for a while in Minnesota, don't you?
Soon that she could actually qualify for residency.
Because I think Minnesota has that blocked off already over the fact that I think you have to live here for a certain length of time before you're allowed to run. So, you know, that she would have to move here and wait until that due course of time was passed. But the moment that that happened, hey, this is America. She has every right to run for an office. She certainly does. And as long as she fits into the guidelines of the particular state she is running in, I have no problem with her running for office. But I don't think she could get away with in Minnesota what she can in New York.
Thank you, Governor Ventura. We have a question now from Paul Anton with Anton and Associates.
Governor, as you mentioned that certain aspects of our government are set up with result with reference to older technology, I was reminded of the fact that we have either 87 or 89 county governments in Minnesota, and the counties were laid out so that a citizen could go from his home to the county seat in a horse-drawn carriage and get back home by nightfall. After you successfully handled the unicameral issue, would you think it might be worth looking at whether or not the system of county governments can be simplified and maybe cut down on the number of those units?
Possibility. Sure, certainly. I'm open to all good thinking. It's like when I deal with lobbyists, you know, you've heard that I don't deal with lobbyists. I do deal with lobbyists, but I deal with them in a different fashion that they're not used to. I tell them, don't bring me your money, bring me your good ideas. I don't need your money, but I'll certainly entertain your ideas. And so I'm open to many aspects of changing government if it changes it for the better. So certainly we'd look at that situation.
Thank you very much, Governor Ventura. Just for our radio audience, you're listening to Governor Jesse Ventura, who's speaking to a packed house at the Marriott Hotel in downtown Minneapolis. He's also speaking to nearly 1,000 folks online from around the country. It's a national town hall meeting with Governor Jesse Ventura. We have a question now from Marcia Phillips, who's a student at the Minnesota High Technology School. I understand there's several students listening to your speech there. She wants to know, and this is in her words, do you still believe single parents should not receive assistance with educational job training? If so, what do you propose, or what are your plans for the state to address this need?
First of all, that's untrue. I do not believe that single parents shouldn't have help. That probably refers to the what happened on the steps of the Capitol, which was very much misreported. They were demanding more in educational benefits than what was being provided for, in which we had already boosted education by $700 million. And I simply confronted her and asked her why I'm responsible for a decision she made, which I still maintain that. That is part of self-reliance that I believe in, that too often today, when we make a life decision in our personal lives and we realize the decision isn't going to give the results that maybe we thought it would, we then turn to the government and expect the government to bail us out for a bad decision we make. Well, I don't believe that that's necessarily government's responsibility always to be the answer or the first line for citizens who make a decision that they later determine isn't a good one. It's up to individuals to, you know, strap on the boots and help themselves. Certainly government can be there to assist. Certainly government has a role in helping out people who are not in a good shape to do that for themselves. But government should be there as a supportive role, not as a dependency role. You are still dependent upon yourself and your families and the people closest to you, which is not necessarily the government.
Thank you, Governor. Our next question is from Jeremy Flick, who is a senior at Totino Grace High School.
Governor, I was wondering how you feel about refugees from other political parties joining the Reform Party in order to bolster their own presidential bid.
Are we referring to Pat Buchanan? The Reform Party is a party of refugees, a lot of it. You know, so first of all, I'm not opposed to it because certainly many people in the Reform Party are people who have fallen out of favor or whatever with the Republicans and Democrats or vice versa, whatever it might be. And so they're looking for an alternative, which hopefully we are that. So I'm not opposed to that. But I am opposed to people who would join the party who truly maybe wouldn't have if not for their own personal political reasons and the fact that maybe there's a $13 million pot of gold out there waiting to be spent on the national level. But the way the party is set up, they have every right to join the party. They have every right to go after the party's nomination, and I don't stand in the way of that. But just because they make the jump doesn't mean they're going to get it. You know, I would stand firm on that, but they certainly have the right to try. And I hope that we have 3 to 4 solid candidates when we go into our convention next August to choose from, because I think it's healthy. More choices is healthy. And so that's the way I would feel about it. I would also finish by just saying I wonder if a person who wouldn't get the nomination, if they failed, if they would stay with the party when it was over and prove that they really want to be part of the party. That will be a testing element also.
Thank you, Governor Ventura. Back to our virtual audience. We have a question from Tia Wilkie, who's a data specialist in the employment field. She lives in Columbia Heights, Minnesota. She says, I'm interested in your opinions on helping those who have no job skills or education to be employed at a living wage. She really emphasized she wants to know how we can get more living wage jobs in Minnesota.
Well, first of all, I would tell her to take a look out there right now, because we're in the most unique situation in the nation here in Minnesota. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the United States of America, and we have a great deal of job opportunities out there waiting. Businesses right now can't even fill the jobs that they have, which is a problem unto itself. So what we need to do is look forward in the technology industry, look forward in all those places where these jobs can't be filled, and go work hand in hand with our university, MinSCU, our technical colleges in training and educating people who can then step forward and fill those jobs that are out there waiting to be filled. And believe me, these jobs that are sitting out there are above that wage level that she's talking about. They are above that. And so again, though, it falls under people too. You can only help those that want to help themselves, and the initiative must come from the individual, not from the government.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a question here from Joe Tierney of Anwaton Middle School.
Yeah, Jesse, how was your trip to Japan, and what was your favorite part?
My trip to Japan was fantastic. It was really enjoyable to go back to a country that I hadn't visited in almost 18 or 19 years. It's a very remarkable place. I think the one thing we truly can learn from the Japanese people, you go to a city like Tokyo, of a population of 14 million people, and the remarkable thing about Japan and Tokyo is how clean it is. When you travel on their roads and walk around their neighborhoods, you don't see trash, you don't see pop cans sitting on the curb crushed down, and most of all, you don't see cigarette butts. And believe me, many Japanese smoke, but they take a personal pride in not throwing them on the ground. They dispose of them properly, and that's a lesson we here in this country can learn, is that little personal pride. Take care of yourself, and if we all do that, we'll have... I came home and was very disgusted driving down Interstate 94. How many take a look out there and look at what it looks like? And why is it there? It's there because we have no personal pride and we throw trash out windows instead of taking care of care of it the way you should. And that's one thing you see in Japan. You don't see that. You see an extremely heavily populated area, and yet the cleanliness is unbelievable. What was my favorite part? The sumo shrine. No, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the ceremony that we had there. I enjoyed the mystique of it and the whole culture of the religion that we had there. And plus, it's also an eye opener. Take a shot of sake at 10 a.m. and see what it does to you. No, during the ceremony, they give you a bowl with a shot of sake, and if you've ever had one, it's rough enough at 10 at night, not at 10 in the morning. So, give you a new look on life for that hour of the day, especially for a non-drinker like myself. But, no, it was very enjoyable, and I really enjoyed the sumo shrine a lot.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ned Wall, who is with Oppenheimer, Wolf & Donnelly.
Governor, I've read three criticisms of the unicameral idea. First, it will lead to single-party control of the legislative apparatus. Second, it will make it easier for lobbyists or special interests to influence legislation. And third, it will make it easy to pass legislation since you don't have to negotiate between the two branches or the two houses of the legislature. How do you respond to those criticisms?
Well, let me take them one at a time and review with me if I miss one. First of all, the one on lobbyists, it'll be harder. Right now, in the bicameral system, all you got to do is get to one person, the head of the conference committee. If that one person wants to stop something from happening, they can simply refuse to hear the bill. One person. That's all you got to get to as a lobbyist. In the unicameral, you'll have to get, if there's 135, what's that divided by two? You'll need to get to about 70, let's say, to be safe. You'll need to get to 70 people who will all have to vote. Accountability, which goes along with that. Right now, in the bicameral, you can vote in one house knowing full well your friend who heads a committee in the other house is going to kill that bill. So you can take what amounts to maybe a fraudulent vote to look good, knowing full well that bill will never see the light of day out of the other house. And so I think that answers that question. What were the other two? Yeah, stay with him, because when they give you them three-parters.
I've also read about single-party dominance of the legislature and ease of passing legislation.
Well, for single-party dominance, if you, the voters, one party is going to prevail. One party will be a majority, the other party will be a minority, but you will still have the check and balance of the governor who can veto. Take, for example, interesting Nebraska. Nebraska has a Republican-controlled legislature, but their committee heads, more Democrats head the committee heads than Republicans do, because they take a ballot in secret to vote for committee heads, to where if you're the Republican and you know that a specific Democrat is the most qualified to head this committee, you can vote for that person and not feel the repercussion of your caucus. Which the problem today, and I'll tell you what the problem is over there, it's not the legislators. Many people think that I'm at war with the legislators and all of that. No, I believe every legislator almost comes in there with the idea that they're going to do something, they're going to accomplish, they're going to be successful. The problem is the system. Because right now, in the bicameral, you have unfair legislative positions. The 24-year careerist is powerful. The rookie has no power. Now, why should this legislator carry power? He represents the same amount of people that this one does. Why should this one carry this undue power when the other one doesn't? And the only, you notice, let me put you, go back to the lobbyist question too. If unicameral benefits lobbyists, why are the lobbyists lobbying for bicameral? What was the third part of that question?
Do you want to make it easy to pass new legislation, or do you want to keep it difficult when you have to run through two houses?
Okay, well, there's a flip side to that, too. Do you want to make it easier to repeal legislation? I believe we should be repealing a lot of laws. Right now, you have a very difficult time to do that because you have to do it in both houses. There are still five stop points in unicameral where a bill can be killed. Five places. I think that's enough. Right now in bicameral, you have 13. How does one, and as a citizen, if you're interested in a particular bill, does one have time to watch it go through one whole house and then have to wait while it passes through another one? And you, how many private sector people do we have here today that work solely in the private sector? Do you have two people at your businesses that do identically the same job? Do you? I don't think so. I don't think you have two people that do identically the same work. Well, we do.
Neat.
And I just think it's not needed. It'll work fine. We'll have five checkpoints that a bill can be killed. And why should it be confusing? You people have lives to lead. You have to raise your kids, do your job, whatever else you do, and yet it should be so confusing over there at the legislature that only insiders know what's going on? I don't think so. One of the big things I faced when I became mayor of Brooklyn Park, the first thing I said is I want all council meetings on television, cable TV. I want the people to know what we're talking about. If they can't get here, they can watch it at home. I had all the opposition in the world to that. We can't do that. The room isn't right, this and that, this and that. I looked at them and said, look, we're not doing a four-camera sitcom here. You know, one camera at the end of the room will work. We don't need close-ups. You know, we don't need cutaways and all that stuff. And we certainly don't have to edit what goes on. And the point I say is that get citizens involved. And I can't tell you how many times I had a city council meeting where halfway through the meeting, a couple red-faced citizens came charging in the doors who had been sitting at home watching on TV and got so inspired they jumped in their cars in the middle of the night and came down. I like that. I like that. And I believe unicameral will help accomplish that. It will make it to where every vote is done out on the floor, so you will know how each and every one of the people that you elected voted. And it will not be done. Also, all amendments to bills will be done by a full vote of the legislature, not be tacked on in a conference committee. And then how many are aware when a bill comes out of that final conference committee, you simply now can simply vote it up or down. You have to choose then. If there's an amendment to that bill that you find horrible, you have to make a decision. Well, do I vote for it because of the good of the basic bill? Or do I vote against this good bill that I like because it's got an amendment tacked to it that's terrible? Well, in unicameral, that won't happen because all amendments to bills will be also voted on by the entire legislature.
Thank you very much, Governor, for that elaborate answer. We've done a poll of our online audience. We've asked them, what do you think should be the first priority for government surpluses at the state level? And about half of them said invest in social programs and education, and 43% said return the money to the taxpayers. And do you care to comment on that? What are you thinking about as you look at
these
surplus numbers?
I think you look at what I've done. And that gives you the answer. I believe that if you're going to pass legislation on the floor and you set a budget. You do that through the process. If the economy is so good that you bring in more than what you've legislated for or budgeted for, you give the money back. And if you choose not to give it back, then do it on the floor and let the people know, okay, we have to tax at this level to accomplish what we need to accomplish. Just because you end up with a surplus doesn't mean it's the holiday season. And that, you know, whoa, you know, all of a sudden you can go out and freely spend that. If it's going to be done, let's do it in the budget legislative process. That's why we have it.
Okay, Governor Ventura, we're just absolutely almost out of time, and we're going to go one more time to our online audience and see if we can take one last question.
Okay, Governor Ventura, this question is from James Kohler. He's an Anoka County school bus driver. He wants to know, he says, as a bus driver, we have unemployment in the summer, and that our job protection was taken away by the legislature. Could you take a look at this, and would you help us find alternative employment for the summer months?
That's all. Well, I'll certainly take a look at it, but I would send him the message, what's the matter with you? You know, there's a case of why is it the government's job to find him a job? Last time I looked, and no offense to the Pioneer Press, but I'll use the Star Tribune, last time I looked, there were seven sections in the Sunday Want ads, help wanted. And I'm not being harsh to him. Drive the bus, do it to the best of your ability, but if you've got 3 months off, it is not my responsibility to find you a job. It is your responsibility to find your own job. And if it's a good one, let me know about it. Because I am not adverse to working extra, too. When I don't get paid enough, I find a way to referee and things like that. See, we can have fun doing government, can't we? And a smile.
Thank you very much, Governor.
Thank you, and I wish to thank you all, each and every one of you, for your participation today. Thank you.